I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes.
Hello and welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. Myself, Matt Messiano, and I'm welcome to be joined by Jordan. No Tom this afternoon. He'll be coming in possibly at some points during the session. First thing, so that's Jordan. I'm pleased to be back, but it's not great circumstances that I'm back under.
Yeah, things have gone downhill in that short space of time. Hey, even though we've talked about a win since you've been away, but it's difficult time to, or an interesting time, but a little bit frustrating time to be a Watford fan, I'd say. So, yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Huddersfield 2, Watford 1 then, and let's go from the very beginning then. There was a few changes to the lineup. What was your thoughts on those?
Yeah, I mean, I think initially the big one, or the biggest of the changes, was seeing Emmanuel Dennis start in that central position, obviously replacing Rajovic there. After, you know, one of his worst games, Rajovic, that he had for us at Rotherham away, quite ineffective. And, you know, I think a few of us felt that Emmanuel Dennis down the centre would be an option that were a likelihood that we'd see him used there at some point in the season. And we got to, obviously. So that was kind of the main one that stood out. Apart from that, I guess that, you know, there was obviously some rotation in there. We had to see kind of what was going to happen with the centre-backs. We see Matty Pollock come in. Still the right-back situation hadn't changed. Tom Dalibashiri was probably the next biggest conversation piece there in regards to the lineup. He kept that position, and you again saw Ryan Andrews on the bench alongside another right-back in Jeremy Ngakia too. So, yeah, interesting. I'm sure there's quite a few kind of aspects and things at play there, but yeah, tough one to call.
Mm. I mean, Watford actually took the lead in the game, and it was, you know, a pretty decent effort from Dennis. Was you happy with his performance?
You know, I think he obviously provided you something different. I think it was, for me, it was a question of seeing how we could use him. You know, you look at someone like Yasser Espria, you kind of think he's the guy. If anyone's to play in Dennis, then it's going to be Yasser Espria that's going to kind of find his movement. Obviously, it ended up being the case as well. It was slightly different than maybe you'd expect, but that kind of industrious work down the right, and then, you know, presence of mind and actually effectively getting the ball to him. And there's a really good touch from Dennis, and the way he kind of took the ball under control and got the shot away was kind of exactly what you want from him. But, you know, I thought we missed him out for large portions. You know, how dominant Huddersfield were in terms of pressing us and making things awkward for us. We played the ball quite long, quite quickly. And, you know, Dennis was getting swallowed up by Tom Lees for large portions of the game. The ball was a bit too much in the air for what he can really offer you in that capacity. So we saw some positive signs. Obviously, the negative is going to be the injury that happened, you know, just after the goal. So it wasn't all positive, but I'm glad we're looking at him as a viable option down the centre of the pitch, although he might not be available for a little while now. Who knows?
Yeah, that injury might keep him out for, what, 3 or 4 weeks?
Could well be, yeah. I guess we'll find out the severity and kind of what he can play through, if he can play through any of it at all. But, you know, an injury coming into the game and with the groin there, and, you know, he's tried to play through it and just not been able to last those minutes. So, yeah, I mean, normally that sort of injury, you're looking at least that sort of time frame. But, you know, he was willing to play this one, you know, may have done a little bit more damage and definitely kind of set himself back and made this an injury that's going to cost him some games potentially at, you know, really kind of the worst time, unfortunately.
Whose call is that, Jordan? I mean, don't physio step in and say he's not ready to play and sort of overrule the coach in those circumstances?
Well, I mean, they can give their opinion, but ultimately it's up to the coach and the player. So, you know, they can have their say. And you know, it depends. There's going to be some level of flexibility. And also, it's not, you know, there's a lot of input that goes into it, but it's not a perfect science. You know, they might think he can get through that game. But, you know, it's probably come down to the coach taking the advice of the medical team, and then also Dennis's willingness to play or not, you know, being a factor as well. Obviously, I'm not sure what his amount of training was, his training load in the week prior to this, but, you know, he had a bit of time between games. He hasn't played a tremendous amount of minutes. Obviously, we saw him at Rotherham, but not for a large amount of time. So most likely something is picked up in training and they've kind of hoped that he can go through it. You know, especially if he's picked it up on the Thursday, perhaps. You know, maybe give him a little bit of lighter time on Friday, not really do some walkthroughs and so on, and then try and see if he can go for it on Saturday, and it's just not panned out. You know, a lot of these players are carrying these sorts of injuries. It's just unfortunate that Dennis kind of couldn't last the game or even just the minutes that we were going to keep him on for.
Okay, I said that Tom would come to us throughout the podcast. He's recorded a few bits for us. Let's go to Tom now and find out what his thoughts were on the game.
I thought we were absolutely awful from the word go till the final whistle. And that's an important distinction, because from the outset, there was absolutely nothing positive to write home about. It's a wonder, quite frankly, that they got to the ground on time and put on the right kits, because there was nothing in the performance. The ball, honestly, it felt like didn't get out of our half for most of the first 25 minutes. I tweeted at one point, have we actually completed a pass in their half yet? Because I'm not sure we have. I don't think we got a touch in their box until kind of north of half an hour. There was no kind of midfield. There was no intensity. We just continually gave the ball away. You know, it was backwards and sideways to a ridiculous degree. And to be honest with you, I've heard people say afterwards, oh, Huddersfield deserved to win. No, Huddersfield didn't deserve to win. Both those teams deserved to be kicked out of football for good, because I'm sorry, we were so abject. Their attempts to win it, Huddersfield, were absolutely pitiful, and we essentially handed it to them. Any half-competent team would have annihilated us. There was nothing. There was just antipathy, lethargy, just absolutely feckless. And it was harking back to the real bad times of last season, and evidence that you can't just root these things out over the course of 1 year. Now, I'm not saying that's because we've got bad characters in there, but maybe we haven't got big enough, brave enough, strong enough characters across the group, because nobody was kind of grabbing the game or each other, whatever, by the scruff of the neck and saying, right, come on, let's get our acts together. I said at the top of that answer, it was rubbish right up until the end. And it was, because there was barely any attempt to win it. But even at full time, I noticed, because I was hung around for a couple of minutes at the end, or 5 minutes at the end, probably, Wesley, who did a, I don't want to say kind of lap of applause, because he wasn't really applauding, but he did a lap around, and he was trying to gesture to some players to come over and join him and you know, kind of front up, I think, a little bit to supporters. And a couple of them half-heartedly took a few more steps towards him, then gave up and went back on themselves. And he was kind of looking at them and kind of very demonstratively saying, oh, I'm really pissed off at these guys. And I think that was quite telling in its own way as well. The other thing that I kind of picked up on, non-verbal thing that I picked up on, was Emmanuel Dennis. I know he sort of grabbed the ball and started running back to the centre circle, even though we scored to go 1-0, but I don't think anyone really celebrated with him. And you know, a lot of people have quickly kind of labelled him a bad influence and so on, and tried to put two and two together, you know, when it's probably just correlation rather than causation, his return and our form. But I wonder if there was anything in that. Could be looking at something that didn't, where there was nothing in it, but I do wonder.
Okay, thanks for Tom's input there. Quite a few things to unpick there, Jordan, but first things first, he was, you know, pretty disappointed with the performance overall.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting how far AI software has come to really capture the essence of Tom there. That was great. I think Tom's actually lost his place. I think we can just bring that into the show ongoing now. But you can't really disagree with too much of what was said there. Obviously, covered a lot of bases, but you know, just in terms of the basic performance, it was, you know, it was disappointing. I think we can talk about players and kind of execution, certainly, but I think there were moments, there were lots of missed passes, lots of loose play, definitely. But we were also. It felt like we were very outcoached in this game. You know, the key kind of component of Huddersfield's game was to disrupt, not allow us to have that dominance. Not that we're particularly good at breaking teams down. You know, it's not that it's our strong suit, but we tend to control the ball somewhat, at least in terms of, you know, time on the ball, and just making that really difficult. You know, I've mentioned before, a lot can be said about the opponent and their approach towards us based on how they react to Wes Hoot even in particular. And, you know, that was a real kind of standout. There wasn't much time for him. They were very active in stopping that play, closing down that back line entirely. You know, maybe a little bit more time to Pollock and, you know, see what he can do to you. That can kind of give you a little bit of comfort and in not being as aggressive there, and you can kind of fill those other holes. But you know, it just didn't allow us to really play. And we just don't seem to have that. We don't seem to have the mindset, the confidence to really play through those sorts of teams. You know, under that sort of pressure, we do panic a little bit. You know, it's an individual thing, it's a team thing. It's not something we do consistently, really. You know, we tried at the beginning of the season. I still think we had some positives there, but it's not something we've continued throughout the season. So when we do get into that situation, we clearly don't look comfortable. And we just didn't really ever change from there. Obviously, you know, we made subs early on. I'm sure we'll talk about that in an attempt to perhaps at least change a little bit of the application from the players, you know, kind of maybe wake some players up somewhat. But in terms of adjustments, tactical adjustments, changes to try and compensate for the way that Huddersfield were playing, there are very few. And it just felt like we didn't really have answers.
Yeah. And on the part that Tom said right at the end there, the Emmanuel Dennis celebrations or lack thereof, did you see anything in that?
Yeah, maybe. You know, I think that's definitely an interpretation of it. You know, it's weird. I think the Wes Hoot stuff at the end is telling as well. I heard a few people say that, you know, the player struggling to get players to come around. There's a few Espria and a couple of others that did. I think we're really, this is the first time we're starting to question the group mentality and confidence and belief in what's going on this season. You know, something we've really used as like a pillar of positivity in this season, over this season, has been the unity, togetherness of the team, and in various aspects, the mindset of the team. But this seemed like the opposite of that in pretty much every way. There seemed a disconnect from the head coach and the rest of the team in terms of what we were trying to do. And yeah, it really wasn't good. You know, we've not been good at home anyway. Obviously, we've had, you know, poor performances. I think, is that 7 without a win at home now?
Yeah.
Just, yeah, struggling. So not ideal at all. And, you know, in terms of Huddersfield, they, whilst they weren't good, you know, Tom says neither team should be playing football, they weren't good, but they were effective in stopping us, and that was the primary objective, and it 100% worked.
Yeah, credit to them, to be honest. They did a job on us, and they were effective. Jordan, ahead of the game, a few days ahead of the game, actually, Watford Observer spoke to Vow, and one of the questions they asked was, why are we not more front-footed in the games that we've played in? And Val's response was quite interesting. He said, you know, we like to wait for the first, you know, 15, 20 minutes until we know how the opposition are playing before we react to that. What was your response to hearing that? And do you think do you think he's been misquoted in some way? Or do you think that he didn't really mean in those broad terms, or do you think that that's genuinely what he's been doing, and is that really a good way of managing?
I think there's probably some nuance to it that's maybe lost a little bit in kind of one exchange, perhaps. But yeah, I think there's, you know, if you're going into games and you're kind of essentially you're being a little bit cautious, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with that if you feel like you've got the ability to up the tempo, to change gear and to really kind of focus on those weak points, those kind of areas that become exposed, both in the opposition and also how to kind of counter what the opposition are doing to you, then you know, that's just part of management in general. Really, I don't think it's necessarily unique. Obviously, some unique kind of approach. Obviously, some teams are going to be a little bit more aggressive off the bat and go for it a little bit more early on. And in a fluid game like this, there is merit to focusing and kind of game planning at what points you're going to kind of raise that intensity. You can do that to an extent, but again, by the same token, it is a fluid game that can change so quickly. It's never really going to go to plan perfectly. So it's part of the reason why we've seen the results play out the way we have. You know, we often are hanging around in those games, and it's been decided late on quite often. You know, our kind of energy and work rate has shown, and even just our fitness in general has shown later in games, but that becomes increasingly hard when the squad gets thinner and thinner too. I think if that is the game plan, then it's not particularly been working in recent weeks. You know, this one here, you could maybe say that for the opening few minutes, but we never changed. We never became more effective in any capacity, really, offensively or defensively. We just didn't look at it at all. So yeah, I'm not really sure that approach really had much impact on this one.
Shouldn't, you know, management be prepared for the way that the opposition are likely to shape up ahead of time, though, and prepare for that rather than trying to react in the middle of the game to what it is that they're bringing on the day?
Yeah, you're gonna be aware of tendencies, strong points, weak points in general. Obviously, the other team is doing the same to you. So there's, you know, you're always expecting some level of kind of micro adjustment, or you know, you're kind of anticipating the potential of those sorts of adjustments that might be unique to the day, that maybe give you an opportunity to be a little bit more adaptable on the fly, and kind of, again, you know, reassessing a little bit. You do your homework, and that's to give you a good baseline understanding, but you have to take it somewhat by, you know, match by match basis, and there will be opportunity to potentially capitalize on those aspects of the game in real time, but you know, the majority of that work, as you say, is done beforehand. And, you know, the things that I think really hurt us from Huddersfield aren't things that are necessarily unexpected. You know, in terms of their work off the ball, what they're going to be trying to do when we're in possession, their shape, what they're going to do in possession, you know, how they defend. It wouldn't have been something that surprised the coach. I'm just a little bit surprised we weren't a little more a little quicker to maybe try and at least avoid some of those situations rather than kind of consistently playing into it.
Mm. Well, it, for whatever reason, it didn't seem to work for him, and he made two changes very early on, as you alluded to earlier there, Jordan. I don't think we've seen two changes made so early on throughout the whole season. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but the changes were Kone off and Kayembe off, two players who actually have had very good performances this season, but maybe whatever reason, weren't quite on it on the day. And on came Chakvetadze and, perhaps a little bit surprisingly, Tom Ince. Mm. What was your thoughts on, firstly, the reasons why he made the changes and then the people in question that were changed?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it really was the attempt of a wake-up call to the rest of the team. You know, I feel like in an ideal world, he wouldn't be taking Kone off, really. You know, he didn't start well. I think Kayembe looked like he was struggling more in the game to me. I think he just started quite poorly. You know, maybe if you're going to hook someone, you could say that, and you want someone a little bit more attacking intent, like Chakvetadze. If you just feel like this game's just needs that injection of tempo already, that's fine. Kone, I think probably that the other element of injury plays a part. The calf's still not great. He's still not moving perfectly, and I think that that's still bothering him. So I'm sure Kone wants to play and was not happy to come off, and they went straight down the tunnel. Not sure that's indicative of going straight for treatment on top of being subbed, or if it's kind of a frustration, just kind of, you know, going straight down the tunnel or not. But it's, you know, it's not ideal. It's not ideal for the players, obviously. Good opportunity for Tom Ince and Chakvetadze, of course. I think they did fine, actually. You know, Shepherd Tadic does give us something a little different. I think he was one of the better players in the day. And I actually think Tom Ince had some moments. You know, some of the shots he should have done better with, but he was getting some more attacking positions and he was doing okay. So it's, you know, it didn't make a huge, huge difference. It at least showed some level of reaction, which I think was needed, but it just didn't really kind of culminate in anything substantial, really, did it?
He had more than a few opportunities, Tom Ince. Wasn't able to put anything away, unfortunately, but...
It is unfortunate.
He had several chances. Another talking point, which it's been a talking point for a while, but it's really starting to become more and more of a problem. The right-back situation, Dele Bashiru continued to be preferred to Ryan Andrews, who I think everyone can see is the better option. The answers that we're getting from Vau is that he's tired, that he's not ready to come back in yet, I think are starting to wear thin a little bit on the Watford fans. I don't think anyone's really believing that now. Perhaps earlier on when he was being rested, maybe, but what's your thoughts on that? And also, there's speculation behind the scenes that there's more to this story than simply resting a player.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think the thing is, we've been quite upfront about disciplinary issues previously, haven't they? He's only signed a new contract. It was this year he signed a new contract, wasn't it, too?
Ryan Andrews.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's, you know, I heard some people even suggest that has a move kind of transpired already and stuff. I don't believe any of that at all. I think, you know, it could be two. I think it's really two options in my mind, potentially a mixture of both. You know, you can't rule out the fact that he prefers Dele Bashiru there. Maybe he likes the option of Tom Dele Bashiru. He likes the movement inside and the ability to kind of be in the supporting midfielder at times. Potentially that's what he's seeing there. But also, you know, maybe the fatigue fitness issue is a real problem with Andrews. You know, maybe there's something we're not quite seeing in his recovery or, you know, in his training. You would think by now, with the amount of time he's had out, if it was kind of a workload issue, you can address that predominantly in training rather than match time to an extent. So you'd expect him to, if he was a number one starter and that's the only thing keeping him out, then you should expect him to be back by now. Potentially there's some other element of injury we're not aware of that's just not been talked about and we've not been disclosed for whatever reason. You know, maybe that's the case, but unless we've really changed our approach, I don't get the impression it's disciplinary. So I think it's either preference or if what he's saying is genuinely true, we're just not getting the full extent of it. So it sounds a little questionable, but you know, in my opinion, I don't know why you wouldn't play your best right back. Really, you know, I think he does offer you more than Tom Dele Bashiru there. And that's not to take away from Tom. You know, I think he has done pretty well considering, and he's also a good option at number eight. So it's a strange one, but I'm not quite convinced yet. It's maybe as insidious as it's been suggested.
Okay. During the game, Jordan, there was also noticeable booing from the Watford fans. It's hard to blame them, to be honest. Tom was at the game live and was able to hear that, and he had some thoughts about the booing. I'm just going to bring him in here and we can listen to what he had to say.
Regarding the booing, I can see why people were getting frustrated, and I think people had every right to boo and make their feelings clear. There was just a distinct lack of bravery and conviction and courage to try something, and although the crowd wasn't in a particularly forgiving mood on the day, I think they would have been more forgiving had people tried to do something and make something happen. But as it was, you know, we were doing the most basic, safe, sideways, simple things and getting that wrong over and over. So I can kind of see why it kept happening as well. And also, if that's what Ismail told them to do, then I suppose, you know, what do? Do you break out of his instruction and try and do something off the cuff when he's already hooked two players inside half an hour? I'm not sure. I'm also not sure that it helps either, because they're very clearly lacking a bit of confidence at the moment. So having your own fans getting on your back is probably not ideal either. So it's a bit of a vicious circle, and I'm not really sure what the answer is. So that's certainly not to admonish anyone that made their feelings known. I don't blame anyone. It was absolutely turgid. It was just staggeringly boring, particularly the first half. I looked up after about 25 minutes at the clock, and I was staggered that as many as 25 minutes had gone. It was so bad. Obviously, it livened up a little bit after the two substitutions, which, to be honest with you, were they the worst kind of culprits in the game up to that point? Probably not. The midfield was absolutely and utterly AWOL, but, you know, the balls into midfield were crap routinely. And when we got it in midfield, we immediately gave it away again. So, yeah, I think as much as anything, it was about shaking it. I'm sure there was some tactical thought behind it, but I think as much as anything, the thinking was probably got to make a change here, got to shake it up and kind of put a bit of a rocket up them, because it was just absolutely and utterly insipid, particularly up to that stage. Changing to 4-2-3-1, I'm not sure it improved things necessarily. I never kind of imagined that Tom Ince coming on would be the answer, but I did think at least Chakwetadze stood out as being probably the best player on the park from a Watford point of view.
Those are the thoughts from Tom Burdell. Jordan, you was watching on a screen as you typically do, living in Canada. Was the booing audible? Did you hear any of that?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, the frustration of the fans kind of during the game as well. You know, the misplaced pass and so on was also very, very audible. You know, it was definitely very apparent. So that you could feel that atmosphere early on. Even watching on TV, you kind of get that impression, and you know, we all know kind of what that atmosphere can feel like in those situations. And you can see it on the players' performance too. There's that anxiety and heaviness to the atmosphere that's you know, it's palpable. So yeah, difficult day at Vicarage Road.
Tom was talking about the 4-2-3-1 there. Was there a formation switch, and how did you feel that worked, if that was the case?
I don't think we had any impact on the game in terms of the change. You know, the personnel made a little bit of impact, perhaps in terms of slightly more offensively minded. You know, maybe, you know, we had some chances with Tom Ince and we kind of went for it. There's a bit more Chakwetadze, kind of gives you a little bit of that energy, but very little positive impact or change from really anything we did from the sideline, has to be said.
Yeah, going forward, we weren't that great either. Rajovic has come in for criticism once again. What's your thoughts on him, Jordan?
I mean, the same, to be honest with you. I feel bad. Kind of repeating the same thing for people listening. But, you know, I just think it's where we are with number nine there. I think it's just not a solution right now. I hope it can maybe improve, or we kind of find something, kind of a way of dealing with this, but yeah, it not helpful to lose Dennis at that time.
No, it wasn't. It was something that Tom wanted to talk about as well, so I'll bring him in.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I really felt for Mileta Rajovic, and I went on Do Not Scratch Your Eyes after the game and kind of gave my thoughts on the subject, because he looked like a player who was painfully short of confidence. The header that went high, wide, and not at all handsome, to quote FIFA games of years gone by, I think is one that he would have at the very least hit the target with a couple of months ago. There was another one where I'm pretty sure it was a Spreer kind of squared it to him inside the box, and he sort of poked it, swept it very tamely wide on his left foot. And again, you know, that's his kind of area where, for all his other faults, and of which there are many, you kind of expect him to be a bit more ruthless, a bit more clinical, and put that chance away. Might not have put him away on another day, but it felt to me like a player who was so utterly devoid of confidence that it was, you know, you could see what little confidence he had ebbing away as the game went on. I don't think it helped that the first thing he tried to do was kind of flick on a bouncing ball within a minute or so of coming on near halfway. And he sort of got his timing wrong or jump wrong or whatever, and essentially lost an uncontested header, which when you're 6'4", you just think, oh my God, that should be, you know, that should be bread and butter to him. And, you know, it was a kind of trend throughout any kind of aerial duel he went into went wrong. There was one occasion where he did get on the ball and then he immediately kind of gave it, held it up. He's like, okay, right. And they gave it away. And, you know, it was the showing from hell for him, the afternoon from hell for him. And at this stage, I appreciate our options are somewhat limited because Emmanuel Dennis went off with what looked like a groin problem. One of the players was signalling to the physios, I think, that it was his groin. We obviously know Vakoum Bio is out at the moment with a hamstring problem. I would be tempted to take him out of the firing line altogether because I just don't think there's anything to be gained at this stage from keeping him out there. I know people are saying, you know, we're only 9 points above the relegation zone. We are. I think there are enough teams that we've got to kind of drop through to get sucked into that battle properly. And I just think, you know, almost take him out and work with him on rebuilding that confidence, bulk up a little bit in the gym. I don't know what you think about that, Jordan, but he's a very scrawny kind of 6'4". I'm not talking as Mr. Muscle here myself, but as a tall bloke, but, you know, he's a very scrawny sort of 6'4", and physically he looks beaten in every game. So I doubt that will happen because of the necessity of needing a striker in name, but I really, really felt for him because it was a low point for Milutinović.
Yeah, he makes a good point there, Jordan. I mean, we're basically down to Rajovic or nothing with regards to a striker. Some people have suggested possibly playing some kind of false nine, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think Stan on what you just said there. I think, you know, you could look at other options. You know, I wouldn't be against trying someone else there in that more advanced position. You know, maybe you adjust things tactically a little bit and find a way to kind of incorporate one of those players. But, you know, we're playing that game again of, you know, you get the right back the centre midfielder at right back, and you've got someone else playing striker. It's not ideal, and it's definitely indicative of the squad building that we've kind of we've done over the last few years. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's thinking about that in some capacity. You know, he himself said that he saw Dennis as the left winger, but was playing him essentially because he wanted to try and accommodate the striking options we have. I mean, it's not out of the realms of possibility that we try and do something similar with a different player, give him a chance in a striker position. I think we've got some that could try it, definitely.
Martin is someone that people have been calling for.
Yeah, I mean, they're all going to be different from what we've played with before, right? And they're all different from what he wants in an ideal world. They're not going to be someone that offers you a little bit of everything. They're going to be quite specific. You know, maybe you even look at someone, you know, a little bit more of a technical player. You could even look at Shaq Fatadze, maybe, if you wanted to have someone that can maybe kind of drop a little bit deeper and then kind of have some more interplay, or, you know, direct option in Martins. You could even look at someone like Tom Ince. You know, these aren't ideal options, but none of them are. So it's going to be a tough one. In terms of the physicality thing, you know, we've touched on before, but he really could do with a good, not just off-season, you know, a good... I mean, it would have been great if he could start this a few years ago, but 100% there'd be a lot of focus on his training outside of just purely, you know, technical ball work at the training ground. He needs to be doing quite a lot to improve athletically to really kind of compete at this level, I think.
I know Toby Adeyemo is recovering from the injury that he's had, and I think he's started to play a few games for the under-23s. Possibly he could get thrown in, but it would be
a big call for that to take place, wouldn't it?
I agree. Yeah, no, I think it would be a quite a big one, yeah.
But, you know, if you're looking at other available strikers, he potentially could be someone in the next few weeks to at least be on the bench, maybe. Ken Samuel was also someone that came in for a bit of criticism. Tom had a few words about him.
I thought it was a low point for Ken Semmer as well. He is someone I think who still divides opinion, despite the fact his name is listed or read out as King Ken Semmer ahead of kickoff. But I thought the reason I wanted to touch on him particularly was I thought it was indicative of just our performance overall, that the amount of times we slid a fairly slow, lacking in pace pass into his feet when he had two or three men around him in the close proximity who would just crash into him and win the ball back or knock him off the ball or knock him over or whatever. And we just never seemed to learn. And I just thought that was indicative of a general lack of awareness, smartness, etc., that we continue to try and do that. And you know, he was made to look bad for it. He did have a bad game. Everybody had a bad game. But, you know, it spoke volumes for how stupid we were, essentially, that we didn't adapt, that we didn't realize what was happening, and that it wasn't proving to be a particularly profitable path for us. But yeah, he had a particularly ineffectual game for that reason. I don't fully blame him, but I think he's struggled a bit really since he came back, and there was a lot of hope and expectation pinned on his return, and it's just not really happened for him at all yet.
Yeah, that's a fair point from Tom again. Ken Semmer has been, I don't know, 10-15% under the performance levels that he was putting in prior to coming back. Is that all just part of the just building up to where he was, or
you know, possibly
did he just have a bad game? No one particularly had a great one out there.
I think it's part of it. Yeah, you know, it's partly coming back and also coming back into a team that's performing quite poorly as well. It's just, yeah, it's not a great environment for any one player to make a big difference right now, and I think that's part of the problem. But yeah, Semmer wasn't able to really do too much. Obviously, he did get dropped back into the left back position later on too. But yeah, he misplaced a lot of passes, and he looked rusty to me, definitely.
Hmm. Perhaps if we're going to pick out any positives, it's good to see that Matty Pollock is getting a bit of a run in the team now.
Yeah, I thought he was probably one of the better players. You know, it was kind of a game where he didn't have to do too much in terms of being expansive in possession or anything. He was pretty simple, but he was solid in his duels. He worked hard, made a couple of good tackles, but some good blocks, and yeah, good headers. He was quite dominant. I thought it was one of his better games.
Yeah, and Asprilla, even though he didn't have one of his better games, you know, he still looks, you know, a class above everyone else, and
yeah,
he's come in recently for some links with Barcelona. Have you seen those? Is there much in it, do you think?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, he'll be linked to clubs, no doubt. You know, the last three games, obviously two goals and assist, says a lot about how important he is to us. People that have watched him play, you know, enough football can all see that he's got a lot of potential there. There'll be links, whether Barcelona or not is a team that can feasibly meet that asking price, who knows, but I'm sure clubs of that quality will be looking at him and seeing a potential future asset for themselves, no doubt.
With regards to the side then, what do you think, worst performance of the season?
Up there. The first half.
Yeah,
I think it was pretty poor, and you know, maybe there's a touch of recency bias, but yeah, that was pretty bad. I have to say that was pretty bad.
Yeah, and more worryingly is that it's been a run of poor results now and performances in particular since, you know, well, Christmas time, really. There have been a couple of, you know, okay games, but in general, it's been a sort of downward spiral, and people are starting to wonder how long Valerian Ishmael has left in the role.
It's a valid question. It feels like it could happen at any point. You know, it's unclear. Precisely kind of how much time he has, but you know, I think every game now that's going to be the feeling. Is he going to, if he is here by Saturday, who knows, something could happen beforehand, but it does feel like things are starting to become very tense. Obviously the fan pressure is there, no doubt. You know, maybe it's not all directed at him, there's just a kind of general sense of frustration on top of things, but we know how he operates, so it can't be ruled out. That's for sure.
Yeah. Watford sitting in 11th with that Huddersfield game, it seems like any last lingering hope of playoffs have certainly drifted away now. But when you look at the fixtures to come for Watford, I mean, 11th at the minute sounds like it would be something I think we'd all be pretty happy with finishing in at the end of the season. It could get a lot worse than this. Watford are, you know, a good 9 points away from the relegation zone, but could we be worried about getting drawn into a relegation battle?
I mean, we could get drawn in somewhat. I think we'll be okay, but you know, I mean, you can't rule it out, really, can you? It's possible. We're playing poorly enough right now, you know, in recent games. If you kind of look over the last 10 or so games, and we're kind of performing around the, you know, right around the bottom end of the table, aren't we? So it's not that it couldn't happen. I don't think it will, but it could certainly happen. And you know, I think the thing is with this owner, I think there's always an element of overestimation at times, and consistently actually, in terms of the assets they have at his disposal and the, you know, the ability of the team and so on. And I think he often thinks that he can get more out of them. And I don't think the owner's willing to accept that playoffs are not really a possibility right now. And I think that might be the main motivation if it happens with Ismail, that he sees this as a team that can be competing now and should be towards the top end of the table. So he might do something about it. That's kind of how he operates. So whilst I don't necessarily agree with him on a lot of things, I guess, but that would, I think, is probably the rationale if something was to happen before the end of the season.
It certainly feels the way it does very often before a change is made. But a lot of people out there are wondering if this is going to be a different time. Mr. Potter has certainly seemed less interested in recent months, and he's got a lot going on outside of football that he needs to be focused on as well. And there's also the, you know, the potential that, you know, he might sell up and move on as well. That has been mooted. Probably one of the things he will be thinking about as well is not wanting to, you know, take that hit on paying out Valerian's contract and bringing somebody else in if we're in a position where potentially, and I know I did point out that, you know, we're not far away from the relegation zone despite our place in 11th, just keeping the status quo and allowing Ismail to see out the season. Do you feel like that's more likely than it ever has been previously under other managers because of the current tide that we feel ourselves in?
I think it makes it the hardest one to call, definitely, because there are reasons that he would keep him around. As you say, not necessarily ones that are positive for the long term of the club, in the sense that he thinks, you know, I'm going to stick by this guy, we're going to support him, and you know, we have a good relationship, and we're going to kind of work through this. It feels more likely that if he stays, it's because of those points, or at least heavily because of the points just raised. I think that's pretty accurate. And that, again, that's what makes it a hard one to call. And why, whilst we have that feeling, you know, we've got a bit of a sixth sense for this sort of thing, I think, as Watford fans now. But it's definitely a harder one because of that. Agreed.
Well, Tom's had his view on this as well, so let's bring Tom in here.
I think Valerian Ismail's on thin ice. You know, we've seen the reports from TalkSport. They're usually quite good on these things. The one that always, for me, is like white smoke coming out of the Vatican is John Percy at the Telegraph. He always seems to get these ones on us pretty hot. I think Sammy Mockbell at the Mail is the other one, isn't he? Always seems to be quite well connected with regards to Watford. I can see why, because I think, and I said this again on Do Not Scratch Your Eyes, they're taken as a whole piece. I think he's done a good job over the season, you know, for whatever part he had in clearing out the squad and reducing the size of the squad and the age and all those things. Well, I guess we'll never know, but it's happened on his watch, so I'm prepared to give him some element of credit for it. Discipline and kind of, you know, resetting, if not completely, then starting the reset on the culture and so on, and building a bit more of a likeable team and a nicer, better atmosphere around the place until Saturday, obviously. Winning some games unexpectedly, showing some character in that regard. But the trend presently and the underlying numbers and everything rather suggest that we are going downhill now, and there's little suggestion, and certainly in Saturday's performance, that we know how to arrest that slump. And, you know, you do see it regularly, these teams that look like they're in no danger and then just hit the skids and keep going. And I'm not saying we'll get relegated, but it's a big kind of litmus test now of where the owner's head is at in terms of ambition. Is the ambition to be competing for the top six, or, you know, at least be kind of in the kind of also rounds of the top six, or is it simply just to survive, just to exist in this division, which, you know, kind of aligns with what Scott Duxbury said about being proud to be a championship club in the summer. Because I have no doubt in my mind, not a second's doubt in my mind, that in previous seasons, had we been on a run like this, the head coach wouldn't have made it this far. They would have been sacked, because the expectation would have been that we'd done better, and the messaging would have been, you know, we've backed them with a squad that's capable of doing this, that and the other. We saw it last season, of course. It's the same pretty much every time. So if that doesn't happen now seems like the point, the tipping point, then I think it speaks very loudly and very clearly for where we are as a club now and what the MO is going forward. And it would confirm the suspicions that I and I think a lot of supporters have, that it's now about just surviving in the championship, bringing in revenues as and when, i.e. selling players for decent money, and trying to find an exit route for Gino, because I just don't see a world in which previously any head coach would have been allowed to have gone on this long without getting performances, without getting results or performances, I suppose. All that said, he was obviously given a brand spanking new contract when we were 21st in the division, I think, and hadn't got the body of work behind him that he has now, that kind of good run through the late autumn and early winter. So, you know, whether or not they do pull the trigger or not, I don't know, but it's going to be very, very interesting. And I think it will tell us a lot about what we should expect going forward in any time that Gino has left at the club.
Yeah, that point from Tom there on the contract as well could come into the decision-making process, Jordan.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's you'd assume so, you know, especially with finances being a little bit tighter than they have been. It's not necessarily stopped us before, but this is obviously as well a longer contract. Wouldn't be ideal. You know, obviously you're not necessarily kind of tied to having to pay it all off, depending on what jobs he would take afterwards. But it's still a potential roadblock, or at least a kind of aspect of the decision that must be playing on Gino's mind, no doubt.
Okay. Well, in terms of what the fans are feeling, and this is just a very tiny sort of portion of it, but we've had a little look at a little poll that was put out by at Lou Horns, who always is very good at this sort of stuff. He asked the question, you know, is it the right decision or the wrong decision to sack Vow? 1,839 votes, 71% says wrong decision to sack, only 28% saying right decision to sack. So it feels, overwhelmingly at least, just taking Twitter as that little barometer there, that most fans want to see Vow remain in the position for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think that seems to be the opinion. I think there's justified irritation, justified questioning of some of the aspects of him as a coach that we've seen, and there should be conversation around it. But I think ultimately, given all the factors we've talked about, I don't think anyone really feels confident in the slightest that a change would necessarily have a huge impact on the direction of this season, and in turn, the seasons to come.
In terms of managers that we could look at, and remaining on Luke's very good Twitter thread here, and if you haven't seen Luke, by the way, do have a look at Lou Horns. He says John Dow Thomason, Diego Martinez, Gio von Bronckhorst and Bo Svensson would all be good targets, although some of those less realistic than others. But what are your thoughts on some of those?
Yeah, look, there's some good names for sure. And the thing is, I just, you know, I think we're past the point of good or, you know, even bad, well, good coaches having the ability to really change anything long term. You know, we're very immediacy based. We don't look far ahead. We expect a lot of the coach. I'm not sure that many would come here and, well, the problem is I don't see this issue of where we are as a coaching problem necessarily, or at least not the largest aspect of it. So I would struggle to be excited too much about the head coach that comes in. I think that's my issue when we're talking about potential head coaches now.
because they're not going to get the time or the support or whatever it is that they require to be successful under this regime, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Changing the wheels in your car isn't going to sort your engine issues. You know, it's not. It's a bigger problem than that. It might give you a little bit of short-term success. It might improve some things in some areas, but it feels like only a matter of time before the same things are happening and, you know, we're kind of back in the same position. So in terms of appointments and, you know, staff coming and going, it's more now for me in terms of what we see higher up the ladder and in different areas potentially of the club.
Mm. In terms of what the press is talking about, they've also sort of got hold of the feeling that currently is on the waters, and they're saying that Scott Parker is somebody who could be in the frame, someone who hasn't really got the same pedigree or anywhere close to of some of those previous names I've mentioned, and I don't know if he would be really that great a fit for Watford. But like you say there, Jordan, it ultimately doesn't really matter at the minute who takes that role, because they're going to get the same treatment that anyone would, right?
Yeah, I mean, I dislike the sound of that one in particular, but yeah, again, what you said is true. Not for me.
No. A few people have said, look, if he does have to go, Tom Cleverley could be a good option to steady the ship until the end of the season. What would your thoughts on that be?
I mean, potentially. I think an internal appointment is possible. You know, there's a chance there. How good or how bad it would be is tough to say. It's a difficult one. I'm not against it. I'm not for it. Just very, very mid on that, I think. Middle of the road.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
sorry. I know that's a boring answer, but I just don't, you know.
No, I'm with you completely there, Jordan. I know how you're feeling. I think a lot of us are ready for the season to be done already, and we've still got, you know, a quarter of it left to go. But it's not fun being a Watford fan at the minute. A few more thoughts from Tom before we head to sort of wrapping up.
The other thing, actually, just quickly, I'd want to add on with Ishmael is that, you know, the big thing he talked about in the summer and when he was appointed was intensity, intensity, intensity. Well, Saturday was the least intense performance I've seen from us all season, I think. So, you know, where is that gone? You don't have to be smashing balls into the penalty area for 90 minutes from all angles, but intensity in your play when you have possession, intensity in your play out of possession, you know, it manifests itself in many different ways. And I just thought, if you were trying to explain to somebody with a visual representation what intensity was, you just go the opposite of today, because it was so, so passive in every single respect.
That's the thoughts of Tom Bedell. Massive thank you to him, by the way, for steadying this ship at the Watford Buzz whilst I was away. Great hosting from him, and great work from yourself as well, Jordan. Thank you for that. What do you think of Tom's thoughts there on the intensity levels that have seemed to dissipate over the last few months, really?
Yeah, Paul, you know, we look flat, we look tired, we're thin, lack of depth, lack of options, all of those aspects just, yeah, resulting in what we saw on Saturday, really.
Yeah. If Vau is to remain in charge, what does he need to do to try and, you know, rectify the situation?
I mean, that's a good question. It's probably a good question for Vau as well. I think, you know, he's got to recapture some of that fighting mentality we had when we were winning games in the last minute. We had that belief, we had that, you know, again, that intensity, and there's a physical and a mental aspect that leads us to where we are now. But we have to kind of get some confidence back, and I think we have to rediscover or kind of find a new way of playing. We have to adapt because we've gone stale. I think teams are able to kind of see those weak points, see our strong points, and we're not doing enough to compensate, I think. So this is a good test of him right now. I think if he does stay, how he handled these next few games, even if we don't have that potential to get in the playoffs like we thought we might do, the direction that we go in for the kind of last quarter of the season, if he remains, I think will be quite telling. So it's an opportunity for him, hopefully.
Mm. With regards to what he said after the game, he said, "We cannot explain why we struggle like this at home. I am accountable as a coach for the performance, but the players are responsible for their own performance. sometimes you cannot explain. You stand on the sideline and you see exactly what you have to do. Nobody wants to take responsibility with the ball. You don't want to make a mistake, but you end up making one anyway, and you build the momentum of the opponent. Today is just the mental side. It's not physical. It's not technical. We needed to step up and we didn't. I expected more. The fans expected more. I think the players themselves expected more. Today we accept all the criticism we get from the fans. So I don't know, rightly or wrongly, but shifting a bit of the blame onto the players themselves, Jordan, it seemed like there.
Yeah, there's some accountability for sure on the players too. It's just, it's a larger thing, you know. It's bigger than any one aspect in particular. It's a combination of them all. So we'll see from the coach, we'll see from the players in the next few weeks.
Indeed we will, Jordan. Next up then, we've got a week's break. And then we come back for Millwall. Not a easy game, Jordan. They never give us an easy game. It'll be interesting, though, with the fact that Matty Pollock is currently in the team at the minute, whether he gets an opportunity to kind of make amends for his disappointing outing when he last featured against Millwall.
I'm sure he'll be raring to. It's going to be tough. And against a team that's in a difficult situation, that's kind of in some ways fighting for their lives, and I don't like playing a losing team, so it's going to be an interesting one. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm sure Matty Pollock is as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think that will do us for today. Thank you very much for joining me, Jordan, and thanks for Tom for sending in those very insightful clips as well. It really helped, I think, to give us all a feeling of how where we are at the moment. It's not a happy time to be a Watford fan, but we carry on. We will be back after that to tell you what the situation is. There might be an emergency pod at some point in between then if something happens, and you know what I mean by that. Until then, please do follow us on all the socials at Watford Pod, at Messi Messiano, at Jordan Weimer, at TB Bedell, and try to enjoy your week. I'm sure there's plenty of other football out there that you can watch and enjoy, or if not, there's the rugby too. So, you know, lots of good things to keep you occupied and pretend that we're not Watford fans for the moment. Oh dear. Anyway, we've been the Watford Buzz podcast. We're back next week. See you later, guys. Bye bye.
See you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.